Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, editor of Total Film. Welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today, it is a spoiler for No Time to Die. You have been warned. We are going to be talking about No Time to Die in all the gory detail. So please stop listening now if you haven't seen the film. So today, I'm joined by our deputy editor, Matt Matem.
Hello.
And our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
And today, yes, we are talking No Time to Die.
James, fate draws us back together. Now your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Seffin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, it'll be the death of you.
You can imagine why I've come back to play.
So that's No Time to Die. Here's your final warning. It's a spoiler cast. Okay, so we talked about No Time to Die last week when it had just hit cinemas. People have seen it now, and obviously, huge bombshell. Do you want to just do a quick recap of what this is about?
Yeah, so obviously this is Daniel Craig's final James Bond mission. Here he's facing off against a villain played by Rami Malek, Lucifer Seffin, who's got this kind of MacGuffin, which is this kind of deadly nanotechnology, which has a bit of pandemic type eeriness to it, where it kind of spreads around from person to person, and then they can kind of program it with sort of people's genetic code, so it wipes out specific people, you know. And obviously within that mix as well, there's Bond's relationship with Dr. Madeleine Swann, played by Lea Seydoux, kind of carrying that over from Spectre. That's basically, you know, what this film's about in a nutshell. And it's very much bringing the Craig era to a definitive end.
So I guess we should talk about that end, because that is the big takeaway from this. He dies.
Oh, my God.
What? I mean, not a dry eye in the house when this happened at the premiere. I don't know what it was like at your screening, boys, but people were genuinely shocked that they had gone that far. Is it a bold move? Yeah. Is it a good move? And what did you think of the method of dispatch?
It was a very definitive method of dispatch.
There's no way they're going to be like, oh, Mr. Bond, and he like limps in a bit later with a burnt collar or something.
I sent an emoji to the Total Film WhatsApp group afterwards to try and sort of capture my gasp that I felt after that, because I really was surprised that they went there, because from chatting to Matthew and others beforehand, I was expecting a sort of Dark Knight Rises type ending, maybe where he sort of seems to have been sacrificed, and a Bourne Ultimatum type ending as well, where it's like, oh no, he's dead. And then it's like, oh, but then, you know, you'll see like his car driving off or something in the background or something like that, you know, or and we'll get some kind of special delivery in the post. Or whatever, you know,
it'll be the new
that kind of thing. Yeah. But then as it was getting closer, I was kind of thinking, well, it looks like they're going this way with all those missiles going towards him. And then it's like, look at it, when they actually land, it's like, you know, he's got no chance there. It's like wiped out completely. Yeah. And like, I was shocked and I was sort of, you know, moved, if not to full tears, but I was moved. And I sound silly. I almost feel like maybe I'd be more moved on a second viewing, perhaps knowing it's coming.
And not just so shocked that you actually lean into the emotion of it.
Yeah. And I don't want to jump the gun here by covering other topics we'll probably cover, but just the fact he didn't get the little doo-doo teddy.
Was it Nunu or doo-doo, whatever it was?
Nunu or doo-doo, whatever it was. Like, yeah. He was this kind of like put the bunny back in the box type moment, wasn't it?
And
Blooming bunny just didn't make it.
The bunny didn't make it either. Nobody made it. Not the virus, nothing. I didn't love the fact that he went down with a bunny in his waistband. It felt a bit Armageddon. I was waiting
for the Rock as well, actually.
I don't want to fall apart because I miss you, baby.
That's my father.
Do you know, it's been so long since I've seen either of those films.
Stay with you. Yeah.
Remember, like, Bruce sacrificed himself in the asteroid, but he doesn't have a soft toy, does he, with him?
No, but it's that similar thing. It's the daughter. I do it for her, you know, and the chatting whilst you're going up to open the bay doors and just kind of resigned to this. And that similarly kind of sardonic, cool looking death in the face and being okay with it and assuring the family member on the phone kind of thing. It sort of recalled that, which I didn't want to sort of think about in that moment, but it did sort of recall that. But equally, I was like, wow, there is no coming back from this. Mm. Daniel Craig definitely wanted that. In fact, didn't Danny Boyle leave the project because he didn't agree with Bond being killed off?
That's definitely been a rumor. Like, you never know. I never, you know, you always take those things with a bit of a pinch of salt, but I mean, it kind of, you know, holds water now. It could have been the case, but I did really like the fact they went there. I must say that, and especially as like having really enjoyed Craig's run and having him been the first Bond who's actually known it's going to be his last film. I like the fact he's now got to do something that no other Bond, or he's got to do a couple of things that no other Bond's done, but that is hugely significant. Yeah, he's going to go down in history as the Bond who actually died at the end of his run.
Mm. And
I wonder if it's going to set a new precedent for that.
Yeah. They will die at some point when Barbara has decided to move on to the next one. They get a little note and say, just so you know, in this one,
Movie five, you die.
Or you get, or she'll maybe send you a knitted Nunu bunny in the post and you'll know that it's your last film. So, I mean, obviously the other thing, we can't talk about him dying without talking about the other major revelation, because the reason for him going is a suicide mission in effect. He does it to save those he loved. And it's not just Madeleine Swann, who we expected to, you know, be a part of this from the trailers, but the product of their love. The daughter, Mathilde. What do we think about Bond as a daddy?
Well, I'm surprised that he hasn't sired thousands of children over
this is the child he knows about.
But yeah, that's a brand new thing, wasn't it, to bring that in. I mean, there's a kind of fake out early on, isn't there, when she says, she's not yours, but you thought, yeah, she is, of course she is.
Could they have cast a child with eyes bigger and bluer? Very much supposed to look like daddy.
Great child actor, I thought, as well, for someone so young.
She
really seemed sort of, I mean, maybe she just genuinely was, but she seemed really sad and upset during some of those moments, like when she was sort of being taken off by Rami Malek, you know.
Of course, this isn't the only time that Bond has sired a child. Barbara Broccoli has mentioned in You Only Live Twice in interviews that in the novel of that, Bond unknowingly gets Issy Suzuki pregnant. So there is other occasions when Bond has sired a child, but I mean, this is the first time.
Is that canon in the films?
Not in the films. I sort of felt like his transformation from Bond as we know him to Super Dad was a little fast for me. He suspected that that kid was his immediately. And when she said, oh, I want to show you something, he's like, what, another child? Thought that was a bit lighthearted, considering this was quite a major thing that he thought was happening. And then when he really suspected but didn't know for sure, he was very good at carrying a child, seemed to understand what a child needed, and was, you know, that whole scene where he's really protecting her in the forest and somebody comes to shoot and he turns his back instinctively. It felt a bit like, why is he suddenly just to duck to water? Maybe it's just because he's accomplished everything, I don't know. But it felt a little bit of a massive switch, and I kind of would have liked him to be appalled at, like, I'm a dad, but also this is a something you didn't think I needed to know kind of way. But they're straight back into where they left off immediately, so that didn't quite tally for me. But I think it's a really nice thing that he would sacrifice himself for something like that rather than die in a silly skirmish between some bad guy over here and someone over there, or even just to die for world peace. That's a bit nebulous, isn't it? For him to actually come full circle from that guy, as we discussed last week, the guy in Casino Royale who, you know, has full armor on and is dead inside, to the end of Casino Royale where his armor is stripped from him, to, you know, being in love with Vespa, to then falling for Madeleine, to then actually giving his life for a child. That feels quite satisfying.
I bought into his turning into a soppy dad quickly, just because I know what that's like. You know, I'm just now a complete sop for any of this sort of thing. Yeah. So
you were a hardened secret agent.
Yes, exactly. Obviously, you could kill a man with a spoon before you became a father.
You transform very quickly.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about, obviously, the other biggies. Felix. He's gone. Yeah. He's also dead. Did we need to dispatch him as well? And did we need to do it in a manner that was sort of reminiscent of Vespa going?
Yeah, don't get into water with Craig, clearly.
Doesn't end well. He can't save you if you're drowning, essentially, is the message I'm taking from this. Yeah. But I love Jeffrey Wright as Felix Leiter. I think he brings such a sort of lovely, warm, really sort of, you feel that relationship that those characters have. And as we discussed last week, Matt, those guys, those actors have actually been through this from the very start, because they're working on a film together when Daniel Craig actually got the role. So you really get that sense of history. But it felt like at that point in the film when they killed him off, it was like, oh, actually, nobody's safe now. Anybody could go, even though I don't think any of us expected it would be the number one guy. But was that important to put that peril in at that stage in the film, do you think?
Yeah, I thought so. But I mean, the whole film seemed to be about kind of humanising Bond and really getting under his skin and what he actually feels and who he actually cares for. And you saw it in that moment. I mean, yeah, it was a shame to lose him so early on. But I thought it was one of the more impactful moments, definitely.
Yeah, I thought, for the reasons you said, Jane, obviously about thinking no one's safe. And it also just added to the whole feeling of bringing it full circle, this being a sort of concluding kind of episode. And in a small way, it almost sort of wrong-footed me a tiny bit, because in a sense, I sort of thought, well, because they've killed him,
they won't do anyone else.
Is that going to be the death we've had for the film? Is that the sort of significant death? So it's sort of, I liked that aspect of it as well.
This film is a film that's trying to be a lot more sensitive to, you know, feminist issues. You know, that's why Phoebe Waller-Bridge was brought on board. So it's nice that it's not the Bond woman that's dispensable. You know, traditionally in Bond films, women die and they just get another one. This one, it was actually, you know, the established male character that popped his clogs and the woman that has actually outlived everybody, which is quite a nice turnaround.
Yeah, it was all the ladies, wasn't it? It was, the score chart. It was the men who were falling like dominoes, wasn't it? But all the women sailed through.
I must say, I felt absolutely gutted for Madeline by the end, because she's had such a sort of traumatic life as it is.
Really,
and to be sort of left in that way. Obviously, it's kind of presented in a way, you know, that she's spinning this sort of positive story to her daughter, but I felt really bad for her that after all that, and then she
did get to keep the car though. So
I mean, yeah, that's something.
And whatever else he's got, I mean, he lost his flat, his lovely flat, and all of his belongings at the beginning of Skyfall because they thought he was dead and they sold everything. But I think she probably got quite a lot of other stuff from him. So do we think Matilde could become a 007 in her own right as like the offspring of Bond? Is that where this is going? Is that where Amazon might be taking it? That Matilde Bond is like, you know, preschool Bond and the stuff that she gets up to.
Yeah, she's seen some terrible things already, hasn't she? So she could well follow down that path. I mean, she's the product of two crack Marx people. I mean, both handy with guns, so there's no reason to think she wouldn't be as well.
She's had a great origin story, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And her origin story would be as traumatic probably as her mother's, which we get to see in this film. We get to see this pre-title sequence, which was also a bit of a departure because we start out with a subtitled beginning, which is not very Bond, is it?
No Bond in the, you know,
no Bond in the first few minutes. Quite the departure. But here's Madeline, and we're introduced to Safin. I mean, this is probably his best moment on screen, right?
Yes,
the beginning, because he is genuinely upsetting in his smiley, weird, emotionless mask, just gunning down drunk mums and going after kids.
And, he's a bit Michael Myers almost at this point, you know, for a couple of reasons, especially when he gets like knocked back off the sort of balcony in the house and then he gets back up. That was just pure Halloween.
In our screening, people literally clapped when the kid unloaded the whole gun cartridges into him and he fell. They were like, yeah, go girl.
The machine gunning was quite bloodless, really.
Yes. But,
for a 12-hour.
Just for the fear,
Yeah.
I'd like, if you're someone who's not into horror movies, you know, at all, like, I think you could be a bit chilled by that, you know?
Yeah.
Chilled in the snow. Hey. I like what you've done there. obviously, then she falls through the ice, and that sort of recalled a little bit of Skyfall with Bond under the ice. So with Silver stalking him across the Scottish Moor, did you then like Safin going on? I mean, I think I know what your answer is going to be, but did he keep that momentum going?
I thought when he reappeared in Madeline's office, I thought he was quite spooky then.
Hello, you've got fox gloves in your vase.
I felt like he was looking right into my soul with those eyes. But the problem was, you just couldn't really hear what he was saying or understand what he was saying, what his motivation was. So his threat did diminish quite a lot as the film went on.
Part of Safin's plan early on, which we haven't really gone into detail of, is he's wiping out Spectre in revenge, you know, for the death of his family. And with his sort of special weapon, he does a pretty good job of wiping them all out, really. And on first viewing, I wasn't quite sure how I felt about that, because it just almost felt like this entity that's been so powerful and, you know, sort of such a underlying threat throughout all of Craig's films. It was just, they were just wiped out so easily that it almost kind of diminished them a bit in my mind, that it was like, they were just so easy to get rid of all of them.
Yeah.
Just felt a bit, like they were almost sort of thrown under the bus or something. But
And also it's just like, well, hasn't he done everyone a massive favour?
Yeah.
I still didn't really understand why he then decided, oh, that was enjoyable. Yeah. I think I might move on to Nations now.
When they tried to do that, you know, you're two sides of the same coin type thing, I just didn't feel like, where sometimes, you know, the films do manage that with the hero and villain, I just didn't feel like, you were like, no, you just didn't buy into his motivations. You didn't feel like, you know, he was, you know, a multiverse Bond or Bond through a sort of cracked mirror where, you know,
things. No, because also you've seen, we've seen Silver do that, haven't we? And we've seen that chat between Bond and Silver on an island, another island with concrete brutalist architecture. and they discuss the ways that they're similar, and the menace and the playfulness in that scene is so lacking in the one that we see in No Time to Die. I was automatically, again, comparing a better version of that that was in Skyfall.
Yeah, it's such a shame, wasn't it, to have an Oscar winner there not deliver. Maybe it was just all in the edit. Perhaps he did lose out that way. After all this time, you did kind of expect a bit more from him, really. And to, you know, to be for the swan song, I just wish they'd stuck with Blofeld, really. I thought that would have resonated more if they carried him on. And that would have been a nice departure to carry on with the same villain.
It felt very much like, for my money, that they'd concentrated a lot on the getting Bond to that end point and that emotional arc. And then Safin was created, and that'll do. That will be enough to get Bond on this island where this has to happen, and it doesn't really matter. And also, like, why is he wandering around in those weird clothes? Why why does he like a funnel-neck sweater so much? You know, his Ken Adams styly place with all of those sort of borderline sort of Austin Powers pink suited folks scraping at stuff in a swimming pool. Some of it was really borderline sort of ridiculous for me.
Mm-hmm.
For Craig's last film, after starting out so gritty, I did like that we'd sort of gone on this journey to get to that place. And I'm a real, real sucker for any film like this where the heroes have to infiltrate like a big lair. I just absolutely love it. There's just something about it. It just tunes into some sort of like childhood love of like adventure films or whatever. I just love it when there's like a fortress or a you know, a compound to break into and sneak around with loads of goons.
Get out of my mind, you know, Austin Powers, where they're trying to do a 1,000-point turn in a corridor. There was corridors like that I was expecting a people carrier doing like a 1,000-point turn, and so it sort of took me out of it a little bit. And also Matilde, she's a clever kid. The whole thing with Safin was like, I'm taking the child. No, I won't take the child. Just pop her down. And she found her way back through that labyrinthine place, but under a table. Well done, girl. Would that have happened?
I just didn't buy when he just let her go, because
do you want to go then? All right, then.
That could have really been like a sort of human shield type thing for him. It was a real sort of thing he had against them. And I know there's the sort of threat she can be taken out with the weapon. But yeah, I just thought, come on, like, why would you just let her go when you know, especially while the others are on the loose? Like, if he thought they were dead or something, maybe it'd be so foolish as just to be like, oh, I don't need you anymore. I just didn't buy that bit.
No. And it also felt like the way his method of dispatch was very much Bond just shot him dead in the pond and let him float about. Like, there was no ceremony for that, because it felt like the filmmakers were saying, this isn't really important. This bit is not what we're here for. Yeah. It's this bit over here. This is the main event. So bit of a disappointment. And, you know, Christoph Waltz actually made me like Blofeld more than I did before, because Safin was so sort of meh.
And his death was more of a shock as well. I mean, that felt like a more crucial moment.
Yeah. I thought he worked really well in that sort of Hannibal Lecter type role.
Yeah.
And again, in terms of things getting a bit silly, but for me in an enjoyable way, was
Bionic Eye.
Enjoying that. Yeah, the Bionic Eye. He was using to sort of enjoy the Cuba party.
Because that just reminded me of
carried
like,
around on a little like velvet.
The Dark
cushion.
Crystal, you know, that witch that keeps dropping her eye out and looking around. It's just like, yeah, that man carrying
Mr. Potato Head in Toy Story,
and then obviously Michael G. Wilson cameo there as well. Don't forget, there's Michael G. Wilson dressed up as a general, just wandering past that party scene, like that.
wouldn't the first thing they would have done when they took him in would be searching for bionic eyes? Come on,
you'd think they'd do a bit of a scan. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
you've got a bionic eye, you say. I think we might x-ray that. Just check it's not got Wi-Fi.
I mean, come on, in this world of gadgets, you'd think they would have checked, honestly.
Also, how's he getting a signal out of a concrete bunker? Yeah, who's he on? Is it 3G? Like, what is it that he's got?
Very iffy, isn't it?
I do like the way as well, he was just obviously conducting all these kind of parties remotely. And they just thought he was like, was it mad as a bag of frogs? Is that what Tanner
said?
Bag
of bees.
Bag of bees. Bag of bees. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good line. I like that. Yeah.
Box of frogs, bag of bees.
Bag
get
of bees.
It right.
Bag of bees. Sorry, yeah. Bag of bees. That was Phoebe Waller-Bridge, maybe. I thought Hugh Dennis might have been a Phoebe Waller-Bridge when he turned up.
And again, it's like, oh my God, no one's safe. They killed Hugh Dennis within seconds.
Yeah, that was savage, wasn't it? Yeah, because he comes in as a sort of comic relief. And then he's just cold blood. He's just shot, you know.
Yeah,
and the scientist was pure Boris from GoldenEye, wasn't he? Like, I was expecting him to be shout, I am invincible at some point. It seemed
quite
like a
Borat
real...
as well.
Yeah. Yes, he seemed like a throwback. Let's talk about other throwbacks that were there, because this is very much not only a swan song for Craig, it also is very much a sort of nostalgia trip for the whole Bond franchise, because it's going to be turning 60. What did you like about that? I mean, there's obviously the line that is inescapable with the pre-title sequence where he says, we have all the time in the world, which I hated him saying personally, because it felt so jolting. So I'd have been fine with just the theme tune threading in there without him saying it. But you liked that, didn't you, Matt?
I liked it. Yeah, I liked that. And especially the theme tune. So I found myself always getting a bit chill. I just absolutely love that song. It's possibly my favorite.
Yeah,
and just like when the music starts, so I was already kind of, you know, my emotional guard was slightly sort of let down when the music started playing. And yeah, and I was happy with that line. And then especially the fact it sort of is reprised in a way later, that I sort of felt that worked well, you know, that you kind of get it there. And again, it's sort of almost like wrong footed me in a way, you know, that I was thinking, are they going to go there or not? Is this a double bluff, or are we going to follow the path of on a Majesty's Secret Service? So yeah, I like that. And just, yeah, I mean, just any excuse to hear that music again, I just absolutely love it. Yeah.
Well, you sort of have that when you think it might happen when they're shooting at the Aston Martin in Matera and she's in the car, you're thinking, is she going to get a bullet like Tracy at this point? Yeah. Is this where it ends for her? But they decided not to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really tense. I actually thought that bit where they were shooting at the window and you could
and she was just crying at him
and you could just see
snot
it
down
like,
her nose.
Yeah.
It was
and
really
the,
well
you could just see the window was getting like weaker and weaker in that point, couldn't you?
And like, he was just, oh, minute, he was just like letting it go. And also I felt like that was a bit of foreshadowing as well, because he was prepared to die in that moment over his fury with her, or at least let it get to a point that was really bad. And it was only that she was sniveling there with, you know, this huge snot thing dropping out of her nose, which I was like, hey, fair play. There's a Bond woman actually crying in a real fashion here. And then only then did he say, okay. And then he's like flicking on the smoke and doing
that
all of this.
So cool.
Yeah.
I know it was
so
in the trailers,
cool.
But it's just
like,
wait a minute. That was cool.
That, and that, and obviously the other car that once he's binned that one off, because he likes to trash him, he gets his next incarnation, which we think is from which film?
I wasn't sure. I thought it might have been the License to Kill Aston Martin, the sort of, well, the one with the sort of boxier, squarer sort of finish, but I'm not such a sort of car slash Bond expert that I could definitively say that. But when I sort of Googled it, it does look like that. But I mean, I could be wrong. I wouldn't want to kind of, you know, stake my reputation on it.
No,
definitely,
but it was
that one, but
it's a nice car.
It's a bit
though
like that.
He
nice
can't
car.
Park the bugger, can he? No. He pulls up into a parking space, doesn't even put the car in it. He'll get a ticket for that.
I must admit, I actually didn't notice that. I'm going to look out for it next time now. I won't be able to miss it, surely, but I didn't notice the poor pike.
Let's talk about other callbacks. The other thing that was, you know, Vespa is at the beginning with Casino Royale, and she plays a prominent role in the pre-title sequence here, with Bond having to go and say goodbye to her at her graveside. Did you like that callback? And you also get the first sort of emotional beat even there with him saying, I miss you so much, with such emotion. It works on one level because I love Vespa and Bond as a couple. They're my favourite Bond couple ever. And so to see him still so in love with her and still that emotionally cut up about it, I loved. But by the same token, it reminded me of how wonderful their relationship was and how much I love her. So that when he went back to Swan, I was like, I don't love this one as much. And I was automatically comparing the two of them. It was a double-edged sword for me. How did it work for you guys?
Similar to you, in that I almost feel like this Craig's whole run has slightly shot itself in the foot by her being so good in that film and them being so good together, that anything afterwards seems like, you know, hard to compete. And especially, like, it was cool that they went there and obviously killed her off in the first film. You know, it's something that's really driven this character, and obviously it was just very impactful. But it's always been a slight, you know, you've always wished that maybe she wasn't killed off so she could come back. But obviously, sadly, that's not the case.
But I thought there were clues in the title sequence, all the DNA. I thought, clearly, this is a film about cloning and they're going to bring back Vespa. It's very obvious that we're going to get Vespa 2.0.
Ooh, like in Blade Runner.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You get your girlfriend back.
I was convinced, yeah. And then it didn't happen. So I was disappointed with that.
I would have kind of liked that. Would I? Would I? No, probably not. I like my Vespa the way she is, perfect in Casino Royale.
Just for a cameo.
She does get a cameo, but it's our picture on the side of a grave.
Yeah, it's a nice picture.
It is a nice picture. Let's talk about, though, this virus, because obviously this was the first film to be pulled when the pandemic was beginning, and it's really obvious now why they thought that decision was the best decision. There's so many parallels with it, the idea that it spreads and that you can kill people by kissing or touching them. This unseen threat is just on your fingers and you're literally a walking weapon, which is obviously what we've all been living through and still continue to live through. Do you think that they've made any tweaks in the time that we've been waiting for this to sort of lessen that, the analogy with the pandemic?
Maybe, perhaps, because it does feel like Rami Malek's not in it that much. Some of his scenes were left out, so perhaps they did relate to that. That's what's gone missing, because he really did feel like a supporting player to me for such a long film, for him to have kind of such a low-key presence. So, yeah, perhaps that's what happened.
I also wondered about the nanobots, whether they'd been added in afterwards just to make it not just a virus, but like more sci-fi than that.
Fantasy,
it's definitely not like a COVID thing. It's like nanoscience. It felt like that could have easily been done, because the only discussion of that happens with Ben Whishaw in the lab. And then there's a little bit of a look at a screen whilst we see a little nanobot clutching onto a blood platelet sort of thing. So I felt like that might have been a drop in just to distance it a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely see why they yanked it when they did. And it makes much more sense now that they went so early with that. Oh, God, we can't do it. It's not just about making money at the cinema. It was about it being somewhat probably distasteful to be putting a film out that's about a man, you know, happily spreading a virus that kills millions of people around the world at a time when that's actually happening. Let's talk about other stuff then. Let's talk about clothes. I want to talk about clothes. This is a Bond that wears a corduroy cream jacket that has apparently never been done before in his Patera scenes, which sort of sets the trend for this is going to be very different. Everything about this is going to be very different. And you do see that in Bond's clothing and his choice of clothing. Obviously, we see it in Jamaica, where he's wearing his holy T-shirt, slightly too short. So the gut there's no gut to come out of there, is there? He's still in good shape, but we're sort of trying to suggest he's gone a bit schlubby. You know, he does put the suit on occasionally, but when he's actually out in Norway, he's just wearing a Henley and a weird flasher mac, which didn't feel right for the environment, but also just felt like a weird choice. I didn't understand it at all. And then, of course, his sort of cable knit jumper for going to Safin's lair, which they've talked about at length as being this sort of very much to show his past as a commander and a Royal Navy commander. And actually, Daniel Craig has been made an honorary commander of the Royal Navy. So he could wear one of those jumpers. But yeah, and then there was weird choices for the women as well, like Moneypenny always in a safari wear in the office, like she's about to go and look at the Big Five. And I didn't really understand what was happening with Nomi's clothes either. She was wearing two belts at one point and just some strange outfits going on. I didn't get it.
Special mention to Paloma's outfit there. I think that's going to go down as one of the all-time great movie dresses.
I think, with that one, special mention to Tit Tape, because that dress... I'm surprised that didn't end up in a puddle on the floor. That stayed on. That was amazing.
It concerned me, I could say.
The stuff she was doing in that dress, quite amazing. And in heels as well. I loved Paloma as a character. I loved her little kookiness, the fact that she's like, I've done 3 weeks training.
3 weeks.
I loved her chugging her martini, just getting that down in one
gulp.
Yeah. And then going and being an absolute badass. She was absolutely fantastic. You know, it's like the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers things, you know, where Ginger Rogers says, I'm doing everything he's doing, but backwards and in heels. That's Paloma in this film, isn't it?
Yeah,
she's doing everything Bond's doing, but in that dress and in heels, lipstick perfectly in place. And at the end, still remembers to grab him a cigar for his mate. The perfect super spy. What a great person. And not dead. So I like to see her pop up again. I would love it if she... turned up. In fact, could I see Moneypenny and Nomi and her all on a mission together just as a side hustle when the next Bond's doing another thing? I'd like to see them because they'd probably have a good time together. They'd have a good drink after they'd done it and they wouldn't probably leave as much chaos as Bond. They'd get it done. I feel like they're very capable women, all of them.
Nomi time to die.
Nomi time to die.
Paloma time to die.
Paloma.
So many puns. Such a great title.
Let's talk about puns. And now, Matthew, you love a Bond pun, don't you?
Yeah,
he's attempting re-entry, sir.
Oh.
Keeping the British end up. We did get some of those, not the sexist ones, thank goodness, but we did get a mind blown and various others. Did you like those? No.
It was a bit sort of mid-period Arnie to me, that one.
Yeah, I could imagine.
I felt as well, like for me, the best humour bits were kind of character-based.
Mm.
Whereas... yeah, any of the actual one-liners, just none of them really quite landed for me. Like when Nomi says, like when she said kind of time to die when she booted the scientist
in
the
pool. Work.
It just felt quite flat. Yeah. And like the mind blown.
The funniest bit of it was Ben Whishaw pretending that he hadn't recently seen Bond.
I like that. I also liked his tea service in his drawer. He's got like everything he needs. And in the third drawer down is a full tea service. Let's talk about Whishaw as well. There's a revelation there. I mean, I think we've always assumed that Q is gay purely because of little nuances that Whishaw brings to the role. But I don't think we've ever categorically had it said in Bond. And here he is cooking a lovely dinner with his furless cats for a gentleman who's coming over for dinner. I thought that was really lovely and nicely done. I also like Bond's thing there where he said, you know, they come with fur.
That was quite good.
So I thought Q was great in this. And it's sort of a sad for me as well that now that the Craig era is definitively done, does that mean so is M and so is Q of this world?
Do you know, I was thinking this when you were just talking about a spin-off with Nomi and Paloma and Moneypenny. I was thinking, is that going to be possible now we've done this? Because this is what I found rewatching Casino Royale recently as well. Is you take for granted how old Casino Royale is now from 2006, and back then there weren't even iPhones. Then like Bond has like a WAP-enabled Sony Ericsson phone. So obviously so much has changed. There was obviously Iron Man hadn't come out then, so the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we know it had not even begun. So much has changed in how we sort of perceive like franchise filmmaking that obviously before then Bond, it was just the done thing that you just kind of replaced the actor and the series kind of carried on and sort of didn't really acknowledge it. There was obviously the, what was he say? This never happened to the other fella.
Yeah.
Is that what he says?
Yeah.
So that was just a kind of a wink to the audience, wasn't it? And that was it really. And then you even had obviously the fact that like Judi Dench was Brosnan's M obviously, wasn't she? And then she just carries on in Casino Royale when Craig's introduced as this, you know, just qualified 007, they kind of just ignore that fact, you know, that there was a previous Bond. So now, because we were just in such a different time with people's expectations of franchises, I almost don't even know if audiences would accept it if we just start with a fresh Bond and then you've got Ralph Fiennes and Naomi Harris and Ben Whishaw, because does it just make Craig's absence just feel too... obvious, but it feels just too weird if they've just chatted, like, especially as well having such a monumental send-off, actually going there and killing him off. Found that scene really touching.
But would that not add meat to it, that, you know, if you did, let's say, have a spin-off with those three agents going off, Moneypenny, Nomi and Paloma, that they would talk about Bond having gone and that there would be some sadness? And I quite like that scene where they all had a little send off to Bond with a glass of whiskey and read a little something.
Yeah.
And they genuinely seemed really affected and sad about it. So I could see that sort of grief, you know, following them through on a mission and he exists or has existed within that world while another Bond is happening.
But then you just can't bring a new... unless again, they go the multiverse route and we get that. And then I feel like they'd have to establish a new Bond in a completely separate universe, I feel.
Because Nomi could then be at 007 for a while in an offshoot before the number gets reassigned to somebody else. But it's very interesting, isn't it? I'm sure that Eon are having lots of conversations about this, even though they've categorically said there are going to be no spin-offs and no small screen endeavours for Bond. Does that just mean Bond himself? Who knows? Maybe other characters could get a life on streaming.
In this day and age of franchise fare, absolutely fair play to them if they stick to their guns and do that. But it's just so hard to imagine a cash cow like this not being milked. It's just everything spins off these days, doesn't it? Like everything spins off and multiverses and reboots faster and faster, you know, like how we've seen with Spider-Man and things like that over the years. I just think when you're literally sitting on something that, you know, potentially can make so much money, people aren't just going to allow that just to lie dormant, you know.
No, we'll see. You know, I think Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson have been extremely protective of this franchise for many years, and they're probably not going to start just relaxing those rules now.
I did like the little nod, the painting of Judi Dench, and then you had the painting of Bernard Lee as well.
That was nice, wasn't it?
Timeline a bit, like, was he's the previous M. Does that mean that everything that he did was in the same universe as well? Or, I don't know, it's just a throwback, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that sort of reminds me of the rumours that we had sort of circling, you know, before the film came out, you know, before it was first supposed to come out, that Rami Malek's character was actually going to be revealed to be Dr. No. Like, I think just partly people just, you know, were wondering that because of Blofeld, and then the fact that...
his name's in the title.
Exactly, there's a No in the title.
Yeah,
and the fact he wears a No mask as well, N-O-H, made everyone wonder. But obviously, yeah, that didn't happen in the film. And I, for one, was glad of that, really, because I don't like it when it's just done as a name drop for the sake of it, a bit like how we had Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness, when it's it doesn't mean anything to the sort of new audience watching the film. So I was glad they didn't.
But he's Dr. No-esque, isn't he, with his sort of people wearing hazmat suits on an island and brewing something up, and you know, and his collars, he likes a Nehru collar, like Dr. No. At least we didn't muddy the waters with too many old villains in the same thing. And the other thing I was going to say was that Jordan, who was on set, he was on set of the scene set in the Jamaican bar where Bond first encounters Nomi and where he meets Felix. In that, originally, Felix sang Underneath the Mango Tree, which was sung in Dr. No. So they cut that out, but there was originally a nod to that as well, which I would have quite liked to see Jeffrey Wright. Underneath the mango tree, me lovely and me. Maybe we'll see that in the director's cut. There's loads of things. I'm sure there's loads of things we missed as well, which is sort of why I want to go see it again, because there's probably so many other little Bond nods to heritage and legacy Bonds in there. Obviously, in that scene as well with Felix, we get to meet Billy Magnussen's new CIA operative, who's a big fan of Bond. He's like a fanboy. Yeah. Love your work. Shifty, though, isn't he? He seems shifty from the beginning. Turns out he is. Did you like having somebody like that who was, like a betraying character and turns the tables?
Yeah, I thought it was very obvious that he wasn't quite who he appeared. But I liked him. I liked the kind of slightly weird intensity he brought to it. He was quite hateful towards Bond. So his death was quite satisfying.
Yes. Squished under a Land Rover.
Yeah,
take
that's
that.
A Bond death, isn't it?
Yeah.
I must admit, I didn't see it. I mean, it's just, I just didn't see it coming.
What, him being squashed by a Land Rover?
Oh, no. He's defective.
It was a thing.
Twist.
I just thought he's...
Also, can we talk about in that scene, Bond says, it's my round. He walks up to the bar, gets himself a whiskey and no one else a drink. It's a bit rude. What's that about? Where are your manners, Mr. Bond? I don't know. He doesn't pay. It doesn't park well, and he doesn't buy his own round. It's going down in my estimation.
Still a bit rough around the edges.
Yeah.
That was a nod to Casino Royale.
Also, why did Nomi leave her hair at his house? Might she not need that later for another disguise?
Mm.
But no, she just left it on his bed as like a cat.
Yeah, what's he going to do with it?
I would have thought that the costume department, MI5, might want that back.
One other reference I want to draw attention to that's extremely random, but was the nod to Wallace and Gromit that I spotted.
Yes.
When they were playing the wrong trousers on TV. I mean, I suppose it was there to establish the timeline when you see young Madeline at her home sort of in Norway. I mean, I absolutely love that film, but it was just bizarre to see it referenced in a Bond film, I suppose.
Did you think it was going to pay off later that there would be?
That Bond was going to go around in a tiny train laying track in front of him. Or there'd be a sinister penguin. Yeah. That's another thing I'd like. That's the crossover we need. Wallace and Gromit and Bond.
And Bond.
I mean, Feathers, McGraw and Safin do have a similar sort of energy.
Indeed. Let's talk about the fact that at the end, at the end credits, we do get James Bond will return. That was a bit of a relief to me because I did wonder if it might say at the end, James Bond will not return. And I was like, this is going to be like, not only is Bond dead, but the franchise is dead and they're drawing a line and they've just sold it to Amazon and bad news, we're not doing anymore. I actually wondered if they were going to just totally scorched earth approach to the whole thing. But to see it there, James Bond will return, made me really excited for where this will go next.
They make you hang on till the very, very end for it, don't they, as well?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just so torn about this because I just think they've really just got such a hard job to follow this now because I feel like, as I sort of said previously, I don't mind Quantum of Solace and Spectre, although obviously they are the weaker of Craig's run. I still don't think they're terrible films. I still find them enjoyable to watch. But he's obviously done a few crackers, you know, this included. And I almost feel like they've done the best they could do with Bond with these Craig films, with the best of these Craig films, in kind of his performance. What they've done with the stunts and what they've done with doing just a slightly grittier Bond while still managing to sort of retain and bring in the things you love about it and sort of sticking to the formula, but doing it in a sort of satisfying way that I just don't know what they can do next. It's going to be kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't type thing. If they do something radically different, that, you know, there's going to be so many people who are just going to say, well, no, this isn't the Bond that I know. But then we just can't carry on with Bond just exactly the same as he is in, you know, the year 2021 now, you know, like obviously, especially as this drew a line under that era, you know. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I think actually the possibilities are kind of endless because...
That's kind of exciting.
Which is exciting, yes, because you're in a position that if you did want to make Nomi 007, that is available. You could do that. If you just want to start afresh, tear it all up, start again, you can do that. I think it's quite exciting to see what they might do with it. I don't think that they will give Nomi the 007 badge and have it go that way. I think they'll just start completely afresh. And, you know, the argument, a man I was sitting next to at the premiere was saying, I think they'll just have to go completely in the opposite direction. So where after sort of the nod, wink, wink of Brosnan, they went really gritty and dirty with Craig. Maybe we go back to just heightened, over the top, you know, fun, Technicolor Bond. And it has to be that. We can't continue in this vein anymore because Craig has done it and has done it masterfully. We have to go in a completely different direction. And, you know, as we were talking about last week on the pod, is it now that we do sort of an origin story for Bond and we do him as a very young green agent coming into MI5 and how he earns his stripes and how he puts that armor on that gets him to a place of being a sort of a lethal killing machine, which is as he's described in the books. Maybe that's the way we go, but it will be very interesting to see.
That is, yeah, that is a way you can differentiate it, isn't it? You know,
I like going to M's past, and especially Ralph Fiennes M.
Yeah, he was really good. He's done great work in this, and Tanner, bless him. I mean, there's plenty to talk about and plenty probably if we go and see it again to notice a second time around. So this is certainly not a sort of a rubbish Bond in my book at all. It's not quite the heights of Casino Royale and Skyfall, but it's certainly quite a bit above Spectre and Quantum of Solace for me. So do let us know what you think on Twitter. Where do you think Bond will go from here? But for now, I think it's time to draw a line, as Daniel Craig did under his Bond tenure, under this spoiler cast. It's over.
Blast missiles at us.
Please now put your teddies in your waistband. Get your nunus or your doo-doos or whatever they were called. Get them in your waistband and await for annihilation, because I'm sending them now. Say goodbye, boys.
I'll just ring my wife, please.
Do what you want, but you've got 9 minutes now before they arrive. Okay? Say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye, Mr. Bonds.